Chapter 7 OCD Recurrent Obsessive Compulsive Thoughts. Nina, aged 34. Nina is married and has two small children. She seeks me out because she's tormented by obsessive thoughts, what is also known as OCD, Obsessive Compulsive Disorder. Also, see Wells, 2009, Chapter 8. Since she had her first child, her thoughts have revolved around how she is afraid of what she will do to her children. What if I suddenly put a pillow over their faces? What if I happen to drown them when they're taking a bath? Or what if I open the window and then they fall from the third floor? Her thoughts are very violent, and she does not dare to be alone with her children for fear of what she might do. She therefore makes sure that someone is with her all the time. Her husband is self-employed and has long days at work, and Nina has many evenings where she teams up with family and friends who can be with her until her husband comes home. Her entire life is structured around these violent thoughts, and she plans a schedule based on not having to be alone with her children. Occasionally, she cannot make these arrangements work, and she has to be in the apartment without anyone else other than her children. But it is extremely unpleasant for her. Nina is now in the situation where her husband has taken on even more business in his company. This means traveling abroad and more days where Nina has to be alone. Thought-action fusion. Nina's thought-action fusion is very dominating, which it typically is for OCD sufferers. Also, see Wells, 2009, pages 160 to 161. Thought-action fusion means that we merge with our thoughts and believe that these thoughts are or will become reality, or that they can make us do things against our will. In Nina's case, she believes that because she thinks she's going to hurt her children, it'll end up becoming a reality. Because of thought-action fusion, she will not take any chances, and therefore avoids being alone with her children. We all experience thought-action fusion, but for some people, it takes up more of their awareness. And for Nina, it has such an impact on her life that her whole day revolves around these thoughts. But obsessive thoughts are a symptom of OCD. They are not reality. The likelihood that Nina will actually harm her children is very small, and no greater than you or I would. However, these thoughts have a great impact on her life, and she also experiences intense anxiety when she has them. On a scale from 0 to 10, her anxiety is at 8 to 10. The fact that she has such thoughts also upsets her. She feels like a terrible person and a bad mother, and is being eaten up by guilt and shame for having such thoughts. We must not suppress our thoughts. These thoughts have been permitted to take over Nina's head, and she feels that she cannot control them. In other words, she has a strong negative metacognition around a lack of control. In the first session with Nina, I ask her what she does when she has thoughts about harming her children, and whether she has any strategies that can help her get away from these thoughts. She tells me that she tries to avoid these thoughts and suppresses them. So I ask her how this works for her and whether it helps to tell herself that she does not want to have these thoughts. It does not work well for her. And it is clear that it is not working because you cannot permanently suppress your thoughts. They will continue to pop up if you try to push them away all the time. To struggle against your thoughts means that you will continue to be in contact with them. Therefore, it is important to show Nina that such attempts will not help her. So, I start the first exercise and say to her, "Now, I'm going to ask you something. In a moment, I'll look at the clock, and when I say go, I'll ask you to not think about a pink elephant or have images in your head of a pink elephant under any circumstances. Use all the techniques and strategies that you want. You must keep the thought about a pink elephant out of your head for a minute. I start the timer, and when 1 minute has passed, I ask her how it went. It didn't go so well, she tells me. It was difficult to keep the thought about the elephant out of my head. Fine. So let's try something else. You'll have another minute, and here I'm going to ask you to do nothing at all. Imagine that you're a passive observer to what is happening in your head. Your brain is running the show, and you're allowed to think of anything. Pink elephants, what you're going to have for dinner, etc. All thoughts must be there. It is not you who controls them. It is your brain that decides for itself what will happen in your head. We do the exercise, also see Wells, 2009, page 104. And Nina tells me that the thought about the pink elephant came up, but other thoughts were also given space. The pink elephant did not take up nearly so much space this time. So I ask her, where was it easiest for you to be emotionally? During the first or the second attempt? And when was it the least strenuous for you to be you? During the second attempt, she replies. Where was it easiest for you not to be in contact with the thought about pink elephants? During the first or the second attempt? Again, Nina answers that it was easiest during the second attempt. I do this exercise with all my clients who use thought suppression as a persistent strategy. This exercise shows them why thought suppression does not work as desired. The thought does not go away by trying to suppress it. I carry out another experiment with Nina. On a ping pong ball, I write with a marker, "What if I harm my children?" Then I take a glass of water. Now, you must keep the ball underwater and suppress the thought, because this is the thought that you want to get rid of, is it not? Walk to the door while holding the ball underwater. Nina goes towards the door while she holds the ball underwater in the glass. Did you get away from the thought? I ask her. No, I can't, she replies. Exactly. Nina cannot get away from the thought. She may forget for a moment that she has her finger on the ball, but her finger is still there. Whenever you suppress a thought, you're in constant contact with it. You are there with the thought the whole time. In other words, you cannot get away from a thought by suppressing it at the same time. I ask Nina to take the ball out of the water and look at the text I've written on it. Then I also ask her to look at the coffee pot on the table, at the cup of coffee and the coffee table, and to describe to me what she sees, including the thought. The thought is there, but still there are also other things too. Therefore I ask her, how much space does the thought take up now when you are not constantly trying to keep it submerged? Much less, she replies. When is it least strenuous to be you? When you have to keep your finger constantly on the ball, or when you don't? When I don't, Nina replies. When I spent so much time on such experiments, it is to show the client which strategies work for them and which do not. With the exercises like the pink elephant and the ping pong ball, it is easier to understand what is at stake. Nina wanted to get away from her thoughts, but her suppression strategy made them worse. Also see Espion et al., 2016, pages 93-94. To diffuse. One of the important concepts in metacognitive therapy is diffusion, and to diffuse oneself from one's thoughts. In other words, thoughts are just thoughts. Thoughts are something that happen in your head, but they are not reality. I often ask my clients this question. Let's imagine that right now I'm thinking that it'll rain tonight at 8 p.m. Let's then assume that at precisely 8 p.m. it'll rain. My question to you is this. Why is it raining? You have two possible answers. A. It's raining because I thought it would. B. It's raining because it's raining. The fact that it's raining that very evening at precisely 8 p.m. only means that I have guessed correctly. Perhaps I have seen that the sky is dark and that the wind has started to gust. So it is not raining because I've thought it would, and it is not my thoughts that are making it rain. This is an example of diffusion, where thoughts become separated from the self. Sometimes I also draw a picture of the client and some thought bubbles. I also did this in one of the sessions with Nina. Here you see a thought bubble with the 70,000 thoughts that you thought yesterday. And here is another thought bubble with the 70,000 thoughts that you thought the day before yesterday. And here is another one from the day before that. I don't have time to draw all your thoughts. Here's my question to you. Who are you? Again, you have two possible answers. A. You are your thoughts. B. You are a person who has thoughts. Nina replies, I'm a person who has thoughts. Yes, because you can see that it's difficult to be the 70,000 thoughts from yesterday and those from the day before yesterday. And what about the thoughts you had when you were 5 years old? Are you also those? No, you are not. You have thoughts, and you have had thoughts, and you will continue to have thoughts. But you are not your thoughts. These exercises are intended to help Nina and other clients to distance themselves from their thoughts, that is, to diffuse them. Freely adapted from Wells, 2009, Chapter 5. Nina's positive metacognitions. Sometimes a client cannot stop being in certain and possibly unwanted thought processes. Other times, worrying can be called a choice. For Nina, her obsessive thoughts have a function. She believes that it is important for her to worry because in this way she is constantly aware of herself and her actions, and thus she can also prevent herself from harming her children. For her, these thoughts are therefore maintained by a positive metacognition. At the same time, she also has some other metacognitions where she tries to find answers and understanding. Why does she have OCD? Why do the other mothers she knows not have it? And is she the only one who feels this way? When people tell me that they are trying to find answers to some questions, I typically ask them how long they have tried to find these answers. In Nina's case, she tells me that she has been trying to find the answers since she had the children. In other words, for 6 years. More or less every day, for up to several hours a day. I try to turn the question around. Imagine that every day for 6 years, I go to Amma Beach to look for diamonds. Every day, I walk around out there and look down in the sand for 2 to 3 hours over several years. But do I find any diamonds? No. Why not? Because they're not there. Exactly, I tell her. Is it possible that the answers you're looking for are not where you're looking? Yes, but where are they then? She asks me. I do not know where her answers are. And in the first place, it is not important. But it is important to know that they are not where she's looking, and that there will be consequences for her if she continues to keep looking. Detached mindfulness. Clients like Nina, who are severely troubled by their thoughts, need to use a technique that is called detached mindfulness. It is a technique that helps the client to be in a state of passivity towards their thoughts. Detached mindfulness is not to be confused with mindfulness, which can have elements of activity built into it, because you have to do something with your thoughts, such as to place them or receive them kindly. Already in the first session with Nina, I detect some of her words and expressions like home alone, pillow, opened window, what if I hurt my children? Early in the course of therapy, I want us to work with detached mindfulness. I do not tell Nina what the exercise is called, but I directly introduce the exercise to her. Wells, 2009, Chapter 5. In a moment, I'll say a series of random words, and I'll ask you to do nothing. While I say the words, you just need to relate to them passively, and not actively retrieve information about the word. Just imagine that your brain is running the show. Let's see what happens in your head while I say the words. Then I mention a series of neutral words. Lamp, doorframe, banana, plant, computer, desk, lemon, green, chocolate cake, coffee pot, water. What happened in your head when I said these words? I ask her afterwards. Nina tells me that she saw different things and colors in front of her that just popped up on their own. When she heard the word lemon, she began to think about a lemon tree she has at home, and she wondered what to do with the lemons on the tree. Here, Nina has begun to go too much into the thought and actively relate to it. So we do the exercise again. And this time, she has to let the thought just pop up and let her brain associate freely without her thinking about it further. Therefore, she has to be even more passive and mentally do even less. I carry out the exercise 5 times, until Nina has reached the point where thoughts and images just pop up without her doing anything actively with them. This is the point when she becomes detached, mindful, and has distanced herself from the words. What happens to the old words as I say new words to you? I ask her. They disappear, she replies. And you don't do anything to make the thought disappear? No, it disappears by itself. Then we have reached the right place. Sometimes a client needs 30 minutes to reach this state, other times 10 minutes. But the exercise does not stop here, because now the trigger words must be added. I do not warn Nina about what I'm going to do. I just tell her that we need to do the exercise again. I begin to say these words: lemon, orange, desk, coffee pot, pillow, plant, sunny weather, home alone, water jug, carpet, opened window, easy chair. What if I'm going to harm my children? Apples. I randomly place her 4 main trigger words or trigger phrases between the neutral words, and this time she reacts differently. When she hears the words pillow, home alone, opened window, and what if I'm going to hurt my children, it sets her off. When you said home alone, I came to think about how my husband has to travel in a few days and will be away for 3 days this time. Which means that the words didn't disappear in the same way as the other words disappeared. Yes. Is it possible you gave this thought more attention and that you went into the thought in a different way than with the other words? Yes, Nina replies. I did, because it's important. Whether the thought is important or not is irrelevant. I am only looking at what Nina does differently, since some of the thoughts disappear while others do not. Usually people can see this happening for themselves because they give these thoughts more attention by going into them and then thinking even more thoughts. We'll try again, Nina, I say. Now you have to remain passive to all the words to the best of your ability. And so we continue. We practice several times until it no longer sets Nina off when she hears the trigger words. Finally, Nina finds the passive state where she does not relate to the words anymore or to the triggers. We do not need to deal with everything that happens in our heads. We are not supposed to deal with every little thing that pops up. When we do so, we end up in trouble. And we need to learn that it is not always necessary. Here, again, is an element of choice. You may choose to do something occasionally, but it is not necessary. Therefore, it is crucial to work with detached mindfulness from the beginning, especially when thought fusions take up so much space as they do for Nina. Thoughts are not the same as action. For Nina, it is crucial to learn that her thoughts about harming her children do not mean that she will also harm them. In one of the sessions that I have with her, I ask her to say the thought, "What if I harm my children?" out loud while she's making herself a cup of coffee. I also ask her to look at the painting on the wall and consider how many different colors she can see and which shapes are in the picture while saying, "What if I harm my children?" I carry out this exercise with her so that she can see that thought and action do not follow one another in a direct line. Just because she has a thought does not mean that she's going to act on it. I'm not trying to eliminate the thought, but I'm trying to teach Nina, just as I try to teach all my clients, to have a new relationship to the thought and to remain passive in relation to it. Detached mindfulness not only helps to diffuse thoughts, it also shows clients like Nina that they have some control over their own thought processes. After 5 sessions, Nina is feeling significantly better. In her case, detached mindfulness played a crucial role. This does not mean that she will never have the same thoughts again, because she will. But she has learned to have another relationship to them. When they appear, they are no longer dangerous, because she knows that she does not need to act on them. They are just thoughts. Afterwards, what happens to many clients happens to Nina. The thoughts do not appear nearly as often as before, because we do not need to suppress thoughts that are not dangerous. Mothers with obsessive-compulsive thoughts. Nina is just one out of many mothers with obsessive-compulsive thoughts whom I meet in my clinical practice. They are filled with guilt and shame, and they do not know whom to talk to about these thoughts. In the wrong hands, their thoughts can be given all too much importance, just as the mothers themselves do. Many people will find it difficult to understand that obsessive-compulsive thoughts are just a symptom of OCD, for example, and that women like Nina will not take these thoughts seriously. In other words, her risk of acting on these thoughts is no greater than anyone else's. The shame and guilt about having such thoughts fills these mothers' lives, and they need help to diffuse these thoughts. Having such thoughts is not abnormal, but when the environment and all of us in our daily lives attach such importance to these thoughts, it becomes more difficult for people to deal with them. Thoughts only have meaning because we ascribe meaning to them. Tools. Thoughts like clouds. Detached mindfulness. Detached means to be separate from something. Here, we separate the self from the thought. We see ourselves only as observers and try to neither judge nor deal with the thought. Mindfulness is being present and being aware. With the concept detached mindfulness, we can observe inner experiences without being locked into them. When you are being detached mindful, you have to think about everything between heaven and earth. The aim of the detached mindfulness exercises is not to control where the thoughts go, which means neither trying to suppress them nor analyze them, but simply to note the presence of these inner mental phenomena. This state is as close to doing nothing as one can get. If we try to suppress our thoughts, we end up spending even more time on them. Our thoughts are like clouds moving across the sky, and we need to train ourselves to relate to our thoughts, just like we relate to the clouds in the sky. We allow the clouds to be present and occupy some space for some time, but at the same time, we must remember that they will pass us by at some point. The idea is to use the same strategy towards our negative thoughts and feelings. That even with negative thoughts and feelings, we can and must be satisfied with observing what our minds do or do not do without getting caught up in the thought process. In fact, we should be content with relating to our thoughts as we do with the clouds in the sky, as something passing by that we do not need to involve ourselves in. We can therefore make a list of our typical trigger thoughts and write them down on a piece of paper. At least 4, but preferably more. In between the trigger thoughts, we write some neutral words. These can be some of the words from the exercise with Nina, or we can choose some of the things around us. Table, lamp, computer, etc. We then should practice reading through the list over and over again, either out loud or silently to ourselves. This exercise should be done for at least 1 minute, preferably several times a day or at least several times a week. While going through the list, we should train ourselves to remain passive about the thoughts and feelings the words evoke within us. We simply need to observe these thoughts and remember that a new thought will arrive in just a moment. And we can view these thoughts like clouds in the sky that are passing us by, remembering that we do not have to deal with them just because they appear. Separate thought from behavior. A thought fusion is an idea that a certain thought will also lead to a certain action. In Nina's case, that she will harm her children simply because she thinks of it. Behind the thought fusion, there can lie a fear that you subconsciously want, for example, to harm yourself or someone else. Most people are familiar with unwanted thoughts. These thoughts may be about harming others or of someone we care about having an accident. The content of these thoughts often represents the opposite of what we otherwise believe and want, which is why they cause so much discomfort. We therefore need to train ourselves to remember that thoughts are just thoughts. Between thought and behavior is the will. And why should Nina wish to harm her child when she so clearly feels discomfort at the very idea of it? It is just a thought. It is not the truth. We should therefore ask ourselves how a thought can make us do something that we basically do not want to do. Something we wish is the last thing that could ever happen. Whenever we have a trigger thought, it is important that we respond by being detached mindful. This means that we can be satisfied with observing that the thought exists. We do not need to react. This exercise is inspired by Wells' 2009, Chapter 5.